When you really just contemplate and consider the wonder that it is to be a child of God and to think about how God is God to us, when we pause for a moment and consider the vastness of how God engages in relationship with you and I, it ought to blow us away every time we think about it, and we ought to think about it often. To consider the goodness and greatness and wonder and majesty and power of the God that we serve. And how His design, His choosing, is that we would know Him intimately. And last week we embarked upon a journey that's going to take us through the first week of August. A journey of considering this avenue of prayer that our God has given to us and its wonder. Conversations in prayer as we are talking with one another about prayer, and certainly as we communicate with God through prayer. One of the things last week that I set before us was a challenge to when we go to dinner. Of course, here it's called supper in Texas. Whether we go to lunch, whatever it is, when we find ourselves out and about, not only to pray over our meal, but to use that as an opportunity to be able to pray for whoever's waiting on us. Whenever the guy or the gal, they come and they bring our food, oftentimes we're going to say a prayer. But beyond that, to use that as a moment to be able to influence them and to say, you know, we're going to say a prayer here in a couple of seconds. Is there anything that we could pray about for you? And just to see how God uses that moment to be able to accomplish His will through us for them. And I've been blown away this last week by stories and conversations and texts and how many of you have already put this into practice and have not only blessed others, but have been blessed by others. How amazing is God? Also, with a bit of full disclosure, I need to share with you that last Monday, and so a day after I put this out in front of us as a church, three members of this church, Ryan Smith, Rick Higginbotham, and Jason Reeves, went to lunch and completely forgot to do what I had encouraged you to do. I'm telling you, just completely slipped my mind. Three guys who go to this church, two of whom are ministers, and it wasn't until we got back to the office before we're like, oh, we completely forgot. And I've heard a few of those stories from you guys too. It's okay. You'll have another opportunity the next time you go out to eat. And so for this to be a thing and for others to not only be blessed by us, but for us to be able to influence this community and those around us for the cause of the kingdom and for them to be blessed and ministered to through us. And maybe even if this happens a couple of times, for them to ask, what's going on here? What's the deeper message here? Where's this coming from? And for us to have a God-given opportunity to be able to share what that's about. We spent last week primarily in the Gospel of Matthew and the Gospel of Luke. So moving forward today, I want to ask you to turn, if you will, to the Gospel according to Mark. We're going to be in Mark chapter 14. This is Jesus in the garden. This is Jesus as he prays in Gethsemane. Now this was a place that Jesus went to pray often. This was a place that Jesus had set aside to go and to pray. It was something that His followers, that those who knew Him, those who knew Him well, this was something that they were familiar with. It's the reason why Judas is able to lead those who would arrest Jesus to this place. Begin with me, if you will, Mark chapter 14, beginning in verse 32. They went to a place called Gethsemane, and Jesus said to his disciples, "Sit here while I pray." He took Peter, James, and John along with him, and he began to be deeply distressed and troubled. Now picture this, as Jesus goes to the garden to pray, he brings his followers, he brings his disciples, he brings those who had been in that upper room with him as they cross Jerusalem, as they go to this garden to be able to pray. And yet he leaves most of the disciples behind. He takes Peter, James, and John. They form the inner circle of Jesus' ministry. We see them at critical junctures in Jesus' life and ministry. He takes them a few steps further. He leads them further along. And then Jesus moves beyond them as he prays. Verse 34, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death," he said to them. "Stay here and keep watch." Going a little farther, he fell to the ground and he prayed that if possible, the hour might pass from him. "Abba, Father," he said, "everything is possible for you. Take this cup from me. Yet not what I will, but what you will." Here in this moment, as Jesus is praying this prayer, and as he's communicating with God, and as he's saying to God, "Take this cup from me," I believe verse 36 being connected to verse 35 in Jesus' conversation with God. As Jesus says, "Take this cup from me," it's connected to what he had said prior to that, praying that the hour might pass from him. One's cup is one's lot in life in that moment. I do not for one minute believe that Jesus is saying, "God, is there another way other than the cross?" I know sometimes that's what we say about this passage. But Jesus' entire life has been moving toward the cross. Jesus' reason for being anticipates the cross. Jesus, as he sets everything into motion in creation, as he is a part of the creative process, as God the Father and God the Son and God the Spirit are present at creation. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. As God breathes life into humanity, everything points toward the cross. Jesus knows beyond measure that his purpose is the cross. That the cross is the way in which God is going to redeem and to save us. To make atonement for our sins. To cleanse and to heal us. Right? This is yes. And so I think what Jesus is saying to God in this moment is, "God, be near me because I know what's ahead. Be close to me. Sustain me. Give me strength. Yet not what I will, but what you will." Verses 37 and following. "Then he returned to his disciples and he found them sleeping. Simon," he said to Peter, "are you asleep? Couldn't you keep watch for 1 hour?" And we look at this and we think, come on, guys. But over and over, it's affirmed from those who are present later on in their correspondence and in their letters, that they didn't have a clue They just didn't know. And so they're asleep. Watch and pray. Verse 38, so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. Once more, Jesus went away and he prayed the same thing. When he came back, he found them sleeping again because their eyes were heavy. They did not know what to say to him. Returning the third time, he said to them, are you still sleeping and resting? Enough. The hour has come. Look, the Son of Man is delivered into the hands of sinners. Rise. Let us go. Do you hear the resolution in Jesus' voice? Let us go. Let us go where? He knows he's going to the cross. Rise. Let us go. Here comes my betrayer. If you just look at the next verse there, if you're following along in your text, verse 43, just as he was speaking, Judas, one of the 12, he appeared with him. With him was a crowd armed with swords and clubs, sent from the chief priests, the teachers of the law, and the elders. The chief priests, the teachers of the law, and the elders. These three groups, they didn't agree on anything. They were a part of the same religious sect. They were all a part of Judaism. But you couldn't get these three groups to agree on anything. They wouldn't even show up to be in the same room. And yet what unifies them is their desire to put an end to Jesus. C.S. Lewis says, if you want a religion to make you feel really comfortable, I don't recommend Christianity. And so I wonder what sort of image of Jesus we have. I wonder what sort of image of Jesus you have in your mind. I don't know how you envision him to be or how you understand him to be, but Jesus, one of the things that we see is so very clear in Jesus' ministry, especially as he, in his life, moves closer and closer toward the cross, especially as he moves closer and closer toward Jerusalem, knowing what's going to transpire there. Jesus was a rebel. Jesus was rebellious. It's his rebellion against the status quo that gets him killed. I mean, it's all a part of the plan of God, but this is how God carries out his plan. Jesus was rebellious, and the reason for turning here and the reason for moving in this direction is what I want to affirm to you this morning is that prayer is rebellious. That prayer is rebellion against all of the forces of evil. Satan and his attacks and his control, hell itself. Swiss scholar Karl Barth concludes, to clasp hands in prayer is the beginning of an uprising against the disorder of this world. That as we come to him, and as we confide in him, even as we challenge him, eventually we have to get quiet. Slow down. Pause. And lean in and listen. As we began last week, to be so bold as to ask, Lord, teach us to pray. And in Mark chapter 14, there with Jesus in the garden, in Gethsemane, we have this image of Jesus in a time of excruciating pain. And what is it that Jesus does? What's he do? He prays. He prays, Father, not my will, but yours be done. Which is easy to accept when the outcome is one that we want. But we are not quite certain of the depth of our faith or the radicalness of this prayer until His will and our will are not the same? And then, how is it that Jesus prays? How does He address God? What does He say to God? He says, Abba, Father. What does Abba, Father communicate in regard to our relationship with God in prayer? What does Abba, Father reveal to God for us to even pause and consider how we might cry out to God in this way? What sort of heart approaches God in an Abba, Father sort of way? Because Jesus, here in this moment, in the garden, He's coming to God, the Father, His Father. And He is approaching Him as a child approaches his father. This is a term of endearment. It demonstrates closeness. It demonstrates and reveals vulnerability. It exhibits trust and reliance. Now, I don't know about you. I know that different families function differently, but I don't call my dad father. I just don't. I call him dad. When I was younger, I called him daddy. I have six children. My older children, they all call me dad. My youngest children, whenever they were, and all, yes, all of them, whenever they're small, what do? They start out by saying what? Dada. Or dada. Or even just the one syllable. It's always, think about this. Those of you who have had children or children in your life or grandchildren, I mean, it's, everybody gathers around this little infant waiting for them to say this little syllable. And then everybody's just so excited whenever it happens, right? And it's always a contest. Are they going to say dada? Or are they going to say mama first, right? Which one are they going to say first? And then every time, at least with our six kids, every single time it was dada before it was mama. Tirsa just says that's because that's easier to say than mama. It's an easier thing for them to be able to form. I say it's because they like me better. But even my youngest girls, they haven't gotten to where they call me dad yet. They call me daddy. My oldest daughter, Casey, even at 21, she still, at times, will call me dada. And maybe that's a daughter... father sort of thing. Maybe she's trying to get her way now that I think about it. But these are terms of endearment. These demonstrate and exhibit closeness. Abba, Jesus says. Abba, Father. It demonstrates reliance. It demonstrates trust. It reveals a relationship that exist, and it depicts a relationship of dependence. And I just don't know that we're as comfortable with, or maybe better understood, if we trust God enough to be able to pray this way. To be able to pray with this sort of trust. To be able to pray with this sort of abandon. And so again, we ask, Lord, teach us to pray. The Apostle Paul in Romans 8, beginning in verse 15, writes of God, our Father. He says, you didn't receive a spirit that makes you a slave again to fear. But you've received the spirit of sonship, of daughtership. Go to the next slide, please. And by Him, we cry out, what? We cry out, Abba, Father. Now think about this. This is the Apostle Paul writing the Roman believers several decades after we see these words uttered from Jesus there in the garden. And yet Paul, he says, we cry out as children to our Father, Abba, Father. Verse 16, the Spirit Himself testifies with our spirit that we are God's children. Now, if we are children, then we are heirs, heirs of God and co-heirs with Christ, if indeed we share in His sufferings, in order that we might also share in His glory. We're children of God. God is our Father, Abba, Father. The Spirit that is within us reveals this reality, that affirms this truth. I was reminded this morning, just this morning, of my friend Todd Barton. Todd passed away several years ago from cancer. He struggled with it for a couple of years. And these verses from Romans 8, they became sacred for him. Todd, over and over in the last 2 years of his life, from this text, he would affirm time and time again, I am a child of God, and God takes care of His children. On our best day, when everything is going well, when there's nothing but goodness all around us, I am a child of God, and God takes care of His children. And on our absolute worst day, when everything in this temporary life seems to be falling apart, I am a child of God. And God takes care of His children. Abba, Father. The Apostle Paul again, this time in Galatians. In Galatians chapter 3, we see this description of this portrayal of we as God's children. Verse 29 of Galatians 3, if you belong to Christ, then you're Abraham's seed and you're heirs according to the promise, that we are a part of the lineage of Abraham. Even if not of the lineage of Abraham physically, we're a part of the faith of Abraham. We're a part of the spiritual lineage of Abraham. And then in Galatians 4, verse 6, because you are sons, because you are daughters, because you are children, God sent the Spirit of His Son into our hearts. Go to the next slide, please. The Spirit who calls out, Abba, Father. I did this PowerPoint last week and completely forgot about this. So here's the verse here. Because you're sons, because you're daughters, God sent the Spirit of His Son into our hearts. The Spirit who calls out, Abba, Father. And so this is number 5. We have so many kids, I just give them numbers. And so this is Shelby. This is number 5. Whenever she was little bitty at the park. And I just absolutely love this picture. This portrayal of we're children of God. Dependence and reliance and trust upon God. The Spirit who calls out, Abba, Father, to have this craving and yearning to call out to God and to affirm to Him and to affirm to ourselves just who He is to us. I posed the question last week on Facebook, why do you pray? Why do you pray? And that has, to be honest, that's led to a number of really good conversations this last week. It received more response. I don't know what I was expecting, but a lot more response than even what I could imagine. And I'm grateful for that. So I want to share with you a few of the responses to the question. Why do you pray? There were some who responded more of what do you pray, but let me just share some of the responses that I received. Some in person, but many, most online. Why do you pray? I pray so that I can talk with God. I pray for strength, for comfort, for peace, for forgiveness. I pray for guidance. I pray to let go of the things that have been weighing heavily upon me. I pray to achieve spiritual victory. I pray because it fosters and cultivates my relationship with God. I pray to be closer to God. I pray because I know that God listens and answers my prayers. I pray because I know that God still performs miracles. I pray to connect to God. I pray to bend my will to God's. I pray because I'm seeking His will and not mine. I pray to remind me who is in charge. I pray because I want to stay in close contact with my friend and Savior. My friend Daniel Herrera, he'll be in second service. Daniel posted, "I pray just to make it today," but he was quoting MC Hammer with that. Other responses, "I pray to know God intimately, to grow closer to Him daily. I pray to strengthen my relationship with God. I pray to build a stronger relationship with God." Why pray? Who wouldn't talk to the Creator of our universe if given a chance? It is almost more than I can fathom that He loves me so much that He listens to even me. I pray to have one-on-one time with God. I pray because it is my lifeline. I pray to surrender. I quoted Barbara Brown Taylor last week to say, "I love God, but do not pray much. It's like saying, I love life, but do not breathe much." And so my question to you today, my non-Facebook audience, even though many of you and I are Facebook official, but maybe a place to begin. Why do you breathe? If this statement is true, why do you breathe? Well, you might respond by saying, "Well, I breathe because I want to live. I breathe because I cannot help myself. I breathe because it means I'm alive." And so in regard to prayer, and in thinking about and in asking the harder questions, do you have that sort of need? Do you have that sort of closeness with God? Do you have an Abba Father relationship with God? If not, I'm here to tell you today, He wants it. He wants for you to have that connection to Him, with Him. He wants it. He's designed it. He longs for it. He's created and crafted this avenue for us and this ability for us to be able to commune with Him in prayer. But do we want it? Do you want it? Prayer, it cultivates our souls. You see, the greatest miracle is not that God changes others. The greatest miracle is that He changes us. The greatest miracle is He changes me. And so we continue the conversation and ask our Lord to teach us to pray. His will, not ours. Abba, Father. Let me leave you with this. How many of you remember the movie The Karate Kid? Show of hands. 1984, Daniel Russo, Mr. Miyagi. What exercises did Mr. Miyagi have Daniel-san go through during this process of winning the All-Valley Tournament? Do you remember? Wax on, wax off. Look at all these people. You guys are way ahead of me. Wax on, wax off. Sand the floor. Paint the fence.
That's it.
And we watch that and we think, I could be a karate expert. Just in watching the movie. As a matter of fact, I had this conversation just this last week as I was thinking about maybe applying this to our time of sermon this week. And I'm talking with Ryan Smith. And Ryan, he just goes all in. And he talks about how The Karate Kid, 1984, changed his life. I mean, almost in an obsessive sort of way, which is odd since he's a therapist. But he's talking about how... But he's talking about how as soon as the movie came out, he talked his parents into taking karate lessons. And his parents put him in karate lessons, and he went one time. He just went long enough to get the gi. And then he came back home, and he took it. He drew the bonsai tree on the back of the gi. And then he found out somehow later on that there was like this contest that he could have entered into and won, but his parents didn't enter him into it. And he was so mortified, so upset by that, he even insisted that his family call him Daniel-san as he walked around the house. Hold on, before I go to the next slide, is Ryan here in first service? I know he'll be in second service. That would be so awesome. You guys come back for second service. And so we put this together for Ryan. Go ahead and go to the next slide here. Go back, Adam. Go back to the previous one. Now go forward. Awesomeness, right? Right? Yeah, wax on, wax off, sand the floor, paint the fence. And then in the end, Ryan Smith wins the All-Valley Tournament, right? Okay, go to the next slide because they're not going to listen to anything else if we don't move on. Learning how to pray. Being teachable. Being open, being willing. And sometimes it may seem like wax on, wax off. Or sand the floor, paint the fence. But being teachable. And asking of our Lord, Lord, teach us to pray. And to have a relationship with God that cries out, Abba, Father. Jesus, in Matthew 18, will say, unless you change, unless you are transformed, and become like a child, you cannot enter the kingdom. And my hope is that as we grow in our faith, that we would become like children of God, to be so blessed by God and to respond to God in prayer and to crave communion with God through prayer, and to cry out to Him, Abba, Father. This morning I pray that you've been encouraged, that through this process that we will be stronger in our faith as we approach God as a child does to a child's father. That we would trust Him fully and completely. And this morning we want to extend a time of invitation, and to respond to that invitation requires trust, vulnerability, courage. But this morning, if you need us or you would like for us to pray over you as your church family, it would be an honor for us to do so. If you're struggling with something, if we could pray over you, if one of our shepherds can pray for you, or maybe this morning you want to respond in faith and be baptized into Christ. If that's you, I ask you to come as we stand as Thomas leads us in song.